Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The gunshot was shocking enough, but the aftermath is what blew the roof off. Suddenly, women started talking, lawsuits gained new life, reports from reporters like Brian Anton began putting cameras in front of faces that had for years been silenced, and what they described was devastating. A courthouse that functioned less like a temple of justice and more like a marketplace of exploitation. Women said Judge Kevin Mullins coerced them into sex in exchange for leniency, for the chance to stay out of jail. The accusations continue. And this is the most, I don't know, this to me just really is disturbing. It's all disturbing, but sex in exchange for the ability to keep custody of their own children. One of them, Tia Adams, told Anton she did it with the judge countless times, sometimes in chambers. And that was humiliating, but impossible to refuse because of the coercion and the threats. She wasn't describing an affair. She was describing survival. According to lawsuits and interviews, humiliation was part of the method. Money thrown in her face, allegedly. Warnings to stay quiet, being made to feel small. That certainly is not intimacy. That's control. That's about power, if the allegations are true. And if her story is true, she wasn't the only one. These weren't isolated encounters. They were part of a system that allegedly traded freedom for sexual compliance. What makes this even more disturbing is how normalized it was. Victims said everybody knew, but no one stopped it. And in small towns, silence can be just as powerful as violence. If you're a woman being exploited and you know the community sees and shrugs, and the people who are doing that to you are the ones in power, the ones you would go to for help, it's not a matter of finding your voice. You just don't have one. As long as you're in that environment, you don't. So when Adams says she felt relief after Mullins was killed, as disturbing as that sounds, it makes sense. Sometimes the death of an abuser feels like the only way the abuse ends. Maybe that's a good thing. But it also raises the deeper question, what does it do to a community when its most trusted figure, the judge himself, is accused of being the predator, as are many other people next to the judge? None of these allegations have been proven in court, but they paint a portrait that's dark enough to examine. Because if women like Adams are telling the truth, then the courthouse wasn't just compromised, it was weaponized. So let's dig into this. Siobhan Scott with us again to break all of this down. When, and a psychotherapist and author, I should say, when a woman describes coerced sex as consensual but impossible to refuse, what does that reveal about the psychology of coercion, the long-term toll that it takes?
Yeah, the poor woman. It's definitely when there's coercion and she's vulnerable and the power imbalance exists, she really didn't have a choice. I can totally understand why it happened. But talk about a dark situation. I mean, this is in essence a horror movie.
Yeah.
It's just a nightmare, and hard to imagine how this went along for so long. And clearly a lot of people knew about it.
She also alleges in that interview that Mullins deliberately degraded her, gave her money, literally threw money in her face. I mean, like a stripper almost, I would say, and warning her to stay quiet. Why do abusers in authority like to mix humiliation and control in a situation like this? Because I'm assuming that's how they controlled, if this in fact was going on for quite a long time, how they managed this within their chambers. It wasn't just about, let me get you your kids back, let me get you leniency on this sentence, but more like, I got something on you, even though they're the perpetrator.
It speaks of a very dark, you know, we talk about the dark triad personality and psychopathy and sadism. I mean, it speaks of all that stuff. And the idea that a person with this kind of personality could have this kind of power as a judge, it's, again, we go back to how in the world do these people manipulate their way to the top of the food chain, basically. And I have so much compassion for any woman who was victimized in this way, because it affects them for the rest of their lives.
And this, it sounds psychologically confusing to me. If you are that woman, if you're the woman that Brian interviewed, if you're any of the women that were being coerced into this life with these people and being part of this system. She admitted that drugs and partying sometimes blurred the experience, meaning the allegations are that she was hanging out with this guy, you know, outside of the chambers as well, where it would go from, I can't turn this down, and it being consensual, to then being out in life and having some sort of relationship here. How does trauma affect all of this? The memory, making victims question whether they were complicit or coerced? Because this, it seems like she said, it was very blurred, but that seems to be, if these allegations are true, how the judge would have wanted it.
Yeah, it's very confusing for people in a situation like this. And as you say, we talk about trauma bonding a lot, and people who are victimized, they will tend to blame themselves for it. And certainly if she had addiction issues and an abuse history in childhood, which often those things go together, her tendency would not be to see it very clearly about the level of exploitation and coercion that was going on. And she may have felt at times cared about, even if it was in very limited, small ways. And that can confuse a person who's already got their own vulnerabilities and weaknesses.
It's because predators like this prey on people who don't have that in their life. They don't have somebody telling them the positive things, but then they're able to weave in all of their monstrousness with little hints of positivity.
Little hints. Yeah.
And
sometimes it's just, I'm getting attention, yeah, and I'm getting a crumb of attention from this person. And that's very confusing for them.
You know, in small towns, you hear about this. I mean, not exactly this, but you hear about, you know, little small town controversies or big small town controversies all the time. And quite often the term that goes around is everybody knew, but nothing stopped it. What does that kind of communal silence do to victims psychologically?
I think it intensifies the damage from the abuser, because it's normalized and everybody knows, but nobody does anything. So how can a victim even recognize that what's happening is wrong? And, you know, again, they'll blame themselves. It's just, yeah, it's awful to see that kind of normalization of something that's horrendous going on within a community system.
How do communities get into the position where these things fester? Because I don't want to say the communities are set up to be like, hey, let's create a sex cult, you know, in the judges' chambers. But eventually the wrong people get in there and then they start doing bad things. But it often takes a lot of people in a community to make sure something like that stays on the down low. And a lot of people are going to be aware of what's happening. Clearly, there seems to be a lot of people aware here. How do these sort of things fester in communities when it's the dark, dirty secret? Everybody knows or kind of knows, maybe don't want to believe that it's happening, but they know. I mean, that's such a scary thing, but it seems to happen quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Group dynamics are weird. And how do you, I think it's sort of like the frog in the boiling water. It happens gradually over time. People overlook things. They don't talk about it. But it does make you wonder why it took so long in this case, and you had to have a murder of a judge before things started coming to light. It's another confusing thing about humanity and groups and the way things can be normalized.
She said that she felt relief after Mullins was killed. That's some conflicting emotions there. Help me understand that. How do you explain the conflicted emotions that this victim had when their abuser is suddenly gone?
I think it reminds me a lot of children who have been raised with a lot of physical violence and emotional abuse. And I have seen cases where on one level, they've compartmentalized and they have so much hatred for the parent that's hurt them. But on the other hand, if the parent dies, they may feel a sense of relief, but then they also feel a sense of guilt and responsibility. And those emotions are really complicated. And we like to think that we're all capable of being logical. And in truth, humans are often very confused inside with a lot of cognitive dissonance and holding different realities all at once. And that's one of the things that you try to sort out with them in therapy is, you know, really what's the truth here? And what emotions do you have that are grounded in reality and grounded in the truth? And that can take them some time to sort through.
What we just heard is heavy, but necessary. Because if you want to understand why is Sheriff Mike Crack, you have to understand what was allegedly happening around him. If even part of these women's accounts are true, then the courthouse wasn't just the backdrop of this murder. It was the catalyst. Think about the layers of trauma Siobhan outlined, the humiliation, the blurred lines between survival and consent, the normalization of silence, the cognitive dissonance that makes victims question whether they were complicit in their own abuse. This isn't just the story of one woman. It's a pattern we've seen too often in systems where unchecked power feeds on the vulnerable. And it's not just the woman who carry that trauma. Committees, or communities rather, do too. When the place that's supposed to be safe and protect you is the place where you're exploited, the betrayal spreads. It gets into the walls, into the culture, into the stories people tell themselves about what's normal. And that's when silence becomes its own kind of violence. The other thing that stands out is the humanity of these victims. Even in pain, even in humiliation, they were still trying to survive, and survival doesn't always look noble. Sometimes it looks like staying quiet. Sometimes it looks like showing up again because you don't see a way out. That doesn't make them weak. It makes them trapped. And predators know exactly how to build the cage. So when Adam says she felt relief at Mullins' death, it shouldn't shock us. It should remind us that sometimes justice only begins when silence is broken. And the predators are removed from the planet. But here's the thing. If this culture extended beyond the courthouse, into the jail, into the very system meant to hold people accountable, then we're not just talking about one predator. We're talking about an ecosystem of abuse. And that's what the next part of this conversation is going to uncover. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it. It's going to be dropping very soon right here. If you're watching this, maybe it already has. So You don't want to miss any of our coverage. Hit that subscribe button on YouTube and on the podcast platforms. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, either place, and you will find us. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section as well. And if you got a tip, if you got something for us on this, you know, let us know as well. This is such a confusing story. The interview that Brian Enten did, and I highly suggest searching that out, is very telling. He sat down with this woman for a good hour and just had a uncut conversation. It's very telling. And great reporting, by the way, Brian as well. All right, until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.